This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
4:30 in the afternoon here on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment is brought to you by our good friends at Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. The new commercial for Bernstein's debuted on the station earlier today.
I only eat at Bernstein's Deli. Every single meal that I eat is at Bernstein's Deli.
It's interesting because I was there for lunch and I didn't see you today.
Well, I was there earlier.
I knew he was there earlier. They guaranteed. In fact, we're snacking on some pita chips and some red pepper hummus from Bernstein's Deli.
The dip's amazing, but... And I've been eating a lot of it, Drew. But on the commercial that we just did, and I'm happy to see it's out there, you called Kugel.
Yeah.
Remember Jeff Kugel, the guy who got in the fight in junior?
Yes.
Yeah.
He's on the all-food team. We got to tell Remus to put him on the all-food team.
Anyways, for those...
You're not kidding. That's the best part.
It is Kugel. It is Kugel, not Kugel.
Kugel is a Jewish food. It's a noodle-based Jewish food that's generally served at some of our more special holidays.
But that's what you say around the Passover table. You say tomato, I say tomato, you say Kugel. Drew says Kugel.
All I say is, pass me more brisket. First and foremost, pass me more brisket.
Nobody makes a better brisket than Maureen Pollock. I'll put her brisket up again against anybody's. I go there for Passover.
Drew actually doesn't...
Her brisket wins. All of her cooking
Drew
wins.
Drew actually during Passover, just takes a bath in brisket, like juice. That's right.
It's an au jus. It's quite the cologne.
Yeah.
It's quite the cologne. Anyways, Bernstein's Deli. Check them out online, bernsteinsdeli.com. You can visit them on Facebook as well. Cordon Village Mall, Cordon and Lanark, 1700 Cordon Avenue. Great food there at Bernstein's Deli. Wild card races, gentlemen. Earlier today, there was a game in the Eastern Conference that affected the wild card race.
The Frauds lost again.
Yeah. Washington looked bad.
The Frauds being the Washington Capitals. Huge game for them against the Boston Bruins today on home ice. Sort of a must win. Well, not really a must win, but a game that you can really make a statement if you can beat the Boston Bruins, the juggernaut of the Boston Bruins on home ice. Needless to say, they couldn't, based on Richard calling them the Frauds. 4-2, Boston beats Washington. You look at that wild card race in the Eastern Conference right now and talk about a logjam. Columbus, Detroit, Washington, Toronto. Four of those teams with two playoff spots between them.
Huge game tonight.
Right now, the Blue Jackets and the Red Wings would hold down those playoff spots. They all have 80 points. Tonight, it's the Detroit Red Wings against the Toronto Maple Leafs.
That's an awesome game.
Does it get any bigger than that?
Yeah, that's awesome. Well,
7 losses in a row for the Leafs?
Yeah, and they play tonight at home against the Red Wings, a second half of a back-to-back. I didn't think they played that terribly yesterday against Philadelphia. They didn't play well, don't get me wrong.
I didn't see the game.
Well, again... defensive miscues. Yeah. Again, Phaneuf. I mean, he's the captain of the team again, and I realize that for him it's difficult, and Randy Carlyle stuck up for his captain. But again, guys, when you are competing for the last playoff spot, you've lost 6 games in a row, you just can't afford to make mistakes like that. And it's not just Phaneuf. It's been a multitude of defensemen. They have so much problems defending, and Bernier, really, you can't fault him for a lot of these goals. So it's the same old story with the Leafs, and if they don't end up making the playoffs, you're going to have to look back at that trade deadline and the Leafs doing nothing and not acquiring a defenseman to help them out.
And the 7-game streak, I mean, I agree with you, Ezzy, that they ought to have had a defenseman, and their defense just isn't good enough defensively. But, I mean, you've also lost 7 games in a row. It's almost impossible to do that.
I look at and I kind of did a little schedule analysis here with the remaining schedule, and to me it's still the Red Wings and the Leafs that get in there. And
really?
I
do have the Leafs in there, and you look at the schedule, and the Red Wings and Leafs play each other. That game is going to have a lot of ramifications, but you look at the Red Wings and their schedule, it's not easy considering they play some good teams in there, the Bruins coming up and the Lightning, and they've got the Penguins, but 2 games against the Sabres. So the Sabres can really spoil. But then you look at the Leafs schedule, and this 7-game stretch has not helped. But you look at the Flames schedule, they've got the Jets, the Flames, and they've got the Panthers and the Senators. So the Leafs have a lot of games coming up against non-playoff teams.
Which they are right now.
that's a good point.
Tonight's game, we can't overstate it. This is a huge game, Detroit and Toronto tonight, the primetime game on Hockey Night in Canada.
I'm pretty sure, Richie, sorry to cut you off, I'm pretty sure if the Red Wings beat the Leafs tonight, Riddick Bowe's going to knock me out.
By the way, this Riddick Bowe thing.
It's in rapid fire.
We can't talk about it now.
You can talk about it now.
He's never even been to a hockey game before. Have you read the article?
Apparently, he owned part of a.
He's never been to an NHL game before.
Well, you know,
why is he tweeting about Randy Carla?
I assume he saw the popularity of the Iron Sheik. You know, Iron Sheik has got a great Twitter feed, so I assume
he's not going to compete with Iron Sheik.
I assume that he wanted to get on the bandwagon.
That's Team Sheiky right
there. Well, let me ask you, when was the last time you talked about Riddick Bowe? Now he's getting front page news everywhere you go.
Yeah, it's true. That's a good point, Drew.
Thank you.
Self-promotion. Quickly, though, and you're looking at these teams, and obviously, as you mentioned, they're all tied at 80 points. New Jersey's 4 points out, and Philly's 5 points ahead. So there are really four teams here for two spots. I mean, the Leafs' tank job is something. Washington, of course, I mean, I don't trust them with a 10-foot pole. So I don't think the Capitals are going to get in there. And then you look at Columbus, guys. See, I think Columbus with the tiebreaker, too. Columbus
That's a good point.
Columbus has a tiebreaker, 32 regulation overtime wins. Nobody's within four wins. Detroit's four wins behind them in that regard. Reality, they're a point ahead of all these teams.
Sure. Yep.
And I think right now it is Columbus and Detroit who are in the spots, and I think they're the favorites.
Columbus, playing tonight at Carolina, so a game that...
So you like Detroit and Columbus?
Yeah, well,
so we agree on Detroit, but it's Columbus over Toronto. And I think it's going to come down to the last couple games. It really
Toronto
is.
Toronto is a point behind them, and Columbus has two games in hand.
Yeah.
Columbus's schedule isn't easy, but the last week of the season, they have five games the last week of the season.
Mm-hmm. And we talked about that. That's just unheard of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It really is.
Well, and one of those games is that game at Dallas because of the Rich Peverly incident.
Three back-to-backs.
But they're winning that game 1-0, and they're continuing from that point, are they not?
They're winning 1-0, but they're starting the game fresh at the 20-minute mark of the first period.
But they're still playing with 1-0.
But they have the 1-0 lead.
So that's
the way that Columbus has come on is really impressive because they don't have a legitimate superstar, let's be honest. And they've just had a lot of guys having career years, Ryan Johansson, Atkinson, Nathan Horton, even though he struggled, he's helped them. Three back-to-backs in their last seven games. If they can get into the playoffs, they deserve all of the applause in the world they've done.
And then they should get tuned by the team in the first round.
Yeah. And then they'll get tuned by the Bruins.
Well, yeah, I mean...
If they are the 8 seed, they will get tuned by the Bruins, yeah. But they're a big team, and they can play against big teams. So Boston wouldn't be a bad matchup for them. Pittsburgh would be an interesting matchup, too. I think Pittsburgh... Just with the Pittsburgh skill and speed would have too much. Columbus would have too much trouble keeping up, and they'd have a better chance against Boston. But I think they'd lose against both.
Yeah,
but we'll save that for the playoff preview show.
Of course, I see the Detroit-Toronto game today being
great.
I think the winner of that game can probably get in. If Toronto loses, I think they're done.
Well, yeah.
I think they're almost.
But if they win,
six games after this. If they lose, Drew,
I know. I mean,
they're probably done. Is right.
I think if they win, this could be okay. They sort of, obviously the losing streak was terrible, but they may have weathered the storm, and we won this game, and look, we're back in the playoff spot. Maybe we could keep it going now. I think it's just once they get that first win, they'll level out again.
If they lose tonight,
when do they get that first win?
If they lose tonight,
and
Columbus wins, Columbus would be 2 points up
two games in hand,
and the tiebreaker.
In this day and age, Richie, can you make the playoffs and losing seven games in a row at any point in the season? It's incredible, and I take no joy in it. I really don't, because the Leafs were in a position to be a home playoff series, to host a home playoff series, and they have just
tanked.
Most people take joy in that, by the way.
I think a lot of people do.
Yeah, I don't blame them. Leafs are annoying.
I like a lot about this Leafs team. I really do. It's just, I never want to see a team collapse like this. I mean, wasn't it bad enough what happened in the playoffs last year?
No.
I mean, that was bad.
They choked. Why do I have to feel
for them? I'm not feeling sorry for them. I'm just saying this would be 2 years of pretty...
2 years of
pretty,
choking.
Pretty bad choking.
It would be 2 years of choking.
2 years of choking. You are what you are. You're a team of chokers.
I haven't seen choking this bad since I choked on a piece of chicken at a wedding in Indianapolis. That's a true story. And someone was about to stick me with an EpiPen.
Why were they going to stick you with an EpiPen?
Someone thought I was having an allergic reaction. This is our friend Ari Potash's wedding in Indianapolis. I choked on a piece of chicken, puked, and then I had to give myself the Heimlich maneuver in the bathroom. So I haven't seen choking this bad.
Why haven't I heard that story before?
I've told you that story.
For good reason.
And then I was driving home from Grand Forks because I flew from Grand Forks to Indianapolis and drove my car back. And I was going so fast because I was trying to get back in time. I was starting a job. Long story short,
have the job today.
My car exploded, and I had to get someone to drive me closer to the border to get picked up by CAA. Anyways.
How much tax did the CAA guy have to pay in getting you over the border?
It was like a $300 CAA ride.
back to that point. I do agree. If Toronto loses tonight, they are probably out and done.
And then it becomes then the question becomes one of what happens to Randy Carlyle and how does that, you know, affect all the coaching situations.
We will save that if
that happens. No sense in speculating on that. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll look at the Western Conference wild card race, and Ezzy might have more stories of that nature. I really couldn't tell you. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
We just had a dog in the studio coming to say hi and audition to be Ezzy's replacement.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't know if he had any EpiPen-related stories or not, the dog, but...
Story like that's got to be true.
Cute dog, anyways.
I let it ride. I like that pick by Timmy there after Ezzy's ride story.
There you go.
Timmy's on top of it.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, online at tsn1290.ca. This segment of the show is brought to you by CompuStitch Embroidery Design, serving Winnipeg and surrounding areas for over 15 years. No matter the size of the job, small or large, CompuStitch Embroidery Design provides expert attention to customers' needs. CompuStitch Embroidery Design, keeping you in stitches since 1996, the official sponsor of the Illegal Curve game-winning goal and Illegal Curve 50-50 contests. Moving from the Eastern Conference wildcard race to the Western Conference wildcard race. Did your headphones just break?
You can't leave them alone. It's unbelievable.
First of all, before we...
It's a miracle that I can dress myself in the morning.
It really is. Before we get to the, there's a new second place team in the wild card race. In the Central Division, the Colorado Avalanche have just defeated the San Jose Sharks this afternoon by a 3-2 margin. That means the Colorado Avalanche have leapfrogged the Chicago Blackhawks.
Yep.
They're now second in the Central Division, so those two teams will likely play each other. I mean, they're going to play each other in the first round.
They're going to play each other. The question is who has home ice, and doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
I mean, Colorado's had an amazing year. They're going to be a challenge, but I just think Chicago will be too much. But again, we'll save the entire breakdown for the playoff preview show. We should probably focus on this interesting wildcard race.
What's incredible, Drew and Richie, is that now the Phoenix Coyotes can actually catch Minnesota.
Only 1 point behind.
And Minnesota's really had some troubles here. Mm-hmm. Ilya Bryzgalov, we found out before the show, is going to start tonight. Darcy Kemper, who was incredible since Josh Harding went down, is having trouble. So Ilya they've got some issues there.
I'll tell you, he's got trouble.
And
Minnesota, because they're relying on Bryzgalov.
And another, how about this little nugget here? This is incredible to me. Danny Heatley's going
to
be a healthy scratch tonight.
Incredible.
First time in his career.
Yeah.
Have you seen him play this year? He's been invisible for a lot.
He's done. It's unfortunate. He's done.
Well, when you're playing on the fourth line, I mean, on this Minnesota Wild team, Rich, you have Matt Molson, who's lined up on the third line. I mean, you just have so many good forwards, and he's just getting squeezed out there. He's just not good enough anymore
for that
lineup.
He's had so many opportunities, Ezzy, and unfortunately, the things that have happened in his past, I think of. He's had some issues, and I think off-ice issues likely, and on-ice issues, and that's affected on-ice performance, and there's been on-ice issues as well, and he just simply cannot keep up at the National Hockey League level anymore. And I would be interested to see if it gets anything more than an NHL tryout come the offseason.
Yeah, it's amazing to think that. Uh-huh. He goes from being in the Olympics in 2010. Was he on the 2010 team? Yeah, he was.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Heatley, Thornton, and Marlowe put as a line.
Yeah. And then he's gone from a guy who can't even crack a roster anymore. It's unfortunate because I'm a big Heatley fan. He's been a pretty good NHL player.
When you lose speed, I mean, if speed is a main contributing factor to your success... And you lose that speed.
He's not scoring goals.
He's never the fastest guy.
He's got to score goals. If he's not scoring goals, then he can't be in that lineup.
And if he's not, but he's not able to find those spots anymore, is what I'm saying.
Can't get there.
He can't get there in time. I mean, he knows where he needs to be. You don't forget how to get to where you need to be. You just can't get there anymore. And there's nothing you can do to overcome that. I don't know if he's in good shape or not, but it's hard to believe that if he was in peak physical condition, it's hard to believe that it would make that much of a difference at this point.
Well, Mike Yeo said today that he still factors in, but you look at the team, and we mentioned that you've got an amazing top line there with Parise, Koivu, and Coyle, and then you've got Niederreiter and Jason Pominville on the second line there, and then Molson threw him in too as well. It's going to be tough for him to play more than a fourth line role going into the playoffs. It really is. There's just too many better forwards than him.
You look at the Western Conference wild card race, and we mentioned that the Coyotes and the Wild are now battling out. I mean, Coyotes a point behind Minnesota. They both have the same number of regulation wins. They both have played the same number of games. And then, you know, Dallas is 3 points behind Phoenix. They have a game in hand. I'm going to say Vancouver's done. They have, they're 5 points back. And
Vancouver's done.
Vancouver's done. We're looking at three teams here, Drew. Minnesota, yep. Phoenix, and Dallas. And you look at Dallas in respect of Minnesota. They're 4 points back, but they have a game in hand and the tiebreaker.
Richie, I want to look at the Wild schedule if you guys don't mind.
Let's
right now.
Let's do it.
You look at, and by the way, Leafs and Red Wings play tonight. Well, the Wild and Coyotes play tonight. I don't know if you mentioned that. The Wild and Coyotes play tonight. But the last four of the last five games for the Wild, Drew, are at home. But look at the teams they play after tonight. So they play Phoenix tonight, then after that they have seven games. They play the Kings on the road. They play the Blackhawks on the road. Then they come home for four of their last five, like I mentioned. You've got the Penguins at home. Then you come to Winnipeg, you play the Jets. Then you've got the Bruins, the Blues, and the Predators. So four of those last five games are against Bruins. Three of those last five games are against the Penguins, Bruins, and Blues. All very good teams.
Yeah.
So the Minnesota Wild are in danger.
For anything.
I mean, the Wild are a little bit in danger of missing the playoffs altogether.
Yeah, and that's a good point. As they are great at home, 23-9-5 as opposed to the road, 14-17-5-6. But quality of teams you mentioned there, the fact that Dallas could be 2 points behind them with the tiebreaker is probably pretty scary based on those schedules. Dallas doesn't have the most difficult schedule down the stretch. Minnesota fades here. Mike Gill's gone, I think. I think he's done.
Well, he was at the beginning of the year.
Middle of the year, he's almost gone.
Yeah,
like Russo said, another loss or two, he would have been fired.
Yeah, yeah. If they had lost, I think it was to who? Buffalo? Would they play a game against Buffalo?
It was right
December?
Around mid-January, I believe, or end of December, where he was close to getting fired. Michael Russo wrote about it in the Minneapolis Star Tribune, and he wasn't. But if you,
if
you fall here, I mean, you're 3-4-3 in your last 10. That's not Toronto Maple Leafs. That's not much better.
Right, and this Minnesota Wild team, a couple summers ago, Parise and Suter come in,
yes.
And you've traded for Pominville, you've traded for Molson, even though Molson's a rental. This is a team that's in next step mode.
Yeah.
So they're not just trying to get into the playoffs. They want to get to that next step. So all these guys that have been brought in, all the money that's being paid to these guys, this isn't a team, okay, we're happy to make the playoffs
A couple years ago, Chuck Fletcher, I can't remember who the head coach was. Todd Richards.
Yeah.
He put unrealistic expectations on Todd Richards.
Mm-hmm.
The team didn't live up to those unrealistic expectations. That's why they're unrealistic. And then he got fired.
Right.
This year, Chuck Fletcher has given Mike Yeo everything to work with
then
some.
Hold on. Did not address a defensive need as far as I was concerned at the deadline.
Okay.
I think it hurts him.
They've had some unfortunate luck with the goaltending.
And then the goaltending issue, Drew. You're telling me that Darcy Kempner and Ilya Bryzgalov is what I need down the stretch as a coach to win? No. No. So, I mean, if they fall, the goaltending is going to be a factor here. Bryzgalov is terrible.
He has been good since he came over.
He's not any good, though.
But I mentioned on midweek,
the guy lets anything to his blocker side is in. It's like the ocean.
You put about the Minnesota Wild, if they play the St. Louis Blues, the Blackhawks, Sharks in the first round, might be a lot of goals there.
The blocker side, if you shoot to it, it's like the ocean. You can't miss it.
Oh, okay. I was thinking, why does the ocean have a blocker side?
I'm going to put you in the ocean in a second here. But yeah, that's the thing. I mean, I'm telling you, this team has not been given the goaltending. Now, don't get me wrong. You still shouldn't be able to tank because you have that much more talent than Dallas and Phoenix. And I agree with Ezzy. I mean, and you guys, both of you. The talent on paper. I mean, I've had injuries, but Koivu, Parise, Molson, Pominville, Coyle, Granlund, that's just off the, there's a ton of talent. And then you got Cook and Brodziak. You have a nice mix of skill. They're not that big. And I don't love their defense, and their goaltending's been in issues, but the other teams that they're competing with also have their flaws.
Yeah, you could say they're a little bit top-heavy, but not so much anymore. Because you look at the four lines, really the issues, as Richie has quite nicely pointed out here, are when Josh Harding went down, and again, it's terrible, because Josh Harding, first half of the season, that was the best story in the NHL. And we talked about that during the first couple months of the season. Josh Harding was excellent. Mm-hmm. He really was. And because of the complications with his disease, he hasn't been able to play. And Darcy Kemper was doing good, but he struggled. So now when you have a guy that's struggling, a rookie goaltender, I might add, that's struggling, and you've brought in a guy like Ilya Bryzgalov, who went from Las Vegas to Russia to Edmonton to wherever he, how many other places he was, he's a backup guy. So if they go with Ilya Bryzgalov in the first round, well, that doesn't give me a lot of confidence.
Well, then they're going to lose. But, I mean, this is the thing. They can't score. Okay? They are the 26th team overall in the National Hockey League in terms of goals. They have 184. They're only better than Vancouver, Florida, New Jersey, and Buffalo. And Buffalo is historically terrible.
That's why they brought in a guy like Molson.
But look at all the players they have on the team.
Why can't they score?
Well, it's a fair question. I mean, the system that he plays, Mike Yeo, is very defensive.
Yeah.
Well, and we're going to talk about Los Angeles, who also can't score, coming up with Jim Fox.
Yeah, there's a difference, though. The Kings don't let in any goals, right. and the Wild are good, but not as good as the Kings.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The Wild, as we've seen with the Jets, win a lot of games 2-1.
And the thing is, you know, the question you have to ask, and I've watched, I mean, I thought a lot of it was made of his style of play earlier and all that stuff. I think Elliot Friedman wrote about it, and I didn't necessarily agree with what was written because I didn't think that this team is maybe, you know, they're talking about how they want to possess the puck more, blah, blah, blah.
They haven't done that.
They haven't been great in terms of a lot of different things on the roster combined. And by that, I mean, you know, if you're going to play a defensive style, is it going to be at the expense of offense?
Yep. I think that's a good point.
And at the expense of the way the roster's constructed. So has he not been given goaltending? Now, they've tried to have different goaltenders, but has he not been given enough goaltending that he can't open it up?
That's a very good point.
And then is the team built to score now playing defensively? So like the LA Kings are built to defend but be able to score, as opposed to the Wild are built to score, but they're trying to make them defend. Is he trying to put a square peg in a round hole?
The problem is, Richie,
it's a fair question to ask, I think.
So it's a very good point. And the Nashville Predators, where Ryan Suter came from, they had Pecorini, an established top five goalie. The LA Kings have an established top five goalie. The Minnesota Wild don't have that. All due respect to Darcy Kemper and Josh Harding and all that. Josh Harding was doing great, but there aren't... Not everybody can play like that. And Jacques Lemaire did a good job with Minnesota when Nicholas Backstrom was their number one goalie. But
right.
How many teams can play like that? How many teams have a Marty Brodeur? There aren't a lot of teams that can, year after year, they know that they can play that way. They don't have a Scott Stevens and a Scott Niedermeyer. I'm just saying that Ryan Suter, I think, has done a great job. But as Richie said, have they focused too much on that, and they're not allowing guys like Granlin and Coyle, they're not making the most of what they have?
I will say this. I think they're... From what I've seen, and I've certainly not seen them as much as Michael Russo and the guys that follow the team, I've watched them a fair amount, though. I don't understand why they play so much chip and chase based on the way their roster's constructed. I'll put it that way. They chase the puck more than they ought to. They have more skilled players. They're not that big. They're not overly physical. They should play more like the Red Wings, and they don't.
Keep the puck on their stick as opposed to giving it up and then trying to get it back.
Now, they need help on the defense. That's a problem. Getting the puck up sometimes is an issue. And the goaltending. You know, Detroit, you could take issue with Howard, but he's still a pretty good goaltender.
Richie,
goaltending for the Wild. You got to, I mean, I think it is worth noting that they're onto their third and fourth string goaltenders.
Yeah, but he knew when he acquired Brizgalov that they wouldn't have a netminder to fill the net. And he chose Brizgalov and chose to spend his money elsewhere.
But he also chose Brizgalov knowing that he wasn't going to come in and completely knock his socks off. I think.
Well, then that's a problem.
Right. And I think at best he's a backup at this point in his career. Brizgalov, and again, I said this on Wednesday, I think it was a good acquisition in the sense that imagine if they didn't have him, because they didn't have anybody. Right, so
well, but if you're going to go out and get a backup goaltender,
well, they had to just get somebody. That's the point. And so for a fourth round pick, it's worked out good because he's actually played pretty good for Minnesota. But down the stretch here,
you know,
if they lose five games here, they're not even in the playoffs, and that's incredible because the Wild at one point were kind of pushing for a home playoff date there at one point. So it's
It's a big game tonight.
It's a big fall for them.
I mean, it's a huge game tonight. They're in Phoenix, like we said. Their schedule isn't the easiest by any stretch.
No.
You know, I mean, it almost seems like a lot of these teams just end up playing against the same team. So I don't think they have an overwhelming advantage one way or the other in terms of the schedule. But they're, you know, at Phoenix, then they got to go to Los Angeles, like you said, Ezzy. I mean, you know, Chicago, Pittsburgh, I mean, that's not friendly at all.
Nope.
It's the same teams the Jets are playing largely because they're just going to be...
Same division.
You know, same division. They're all making the same road trip. Boston and Pittsburgh, neither of which is on a back-to-back. So even the Wild don't even get that advantage.
What's going to happen, Drew? These are both shaping up to be very, very good races.
Yeah.
The East more than the West, but the West is interesting. And just to note, before we go to break, and Jim Fox coming up on the other side... Dallas, Phoenix play each other the last Sunday of the season.
And it could very well be for that final playoff spot in the Western Conference. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. When we come back on the other side, LA Kings color analyst Jim Fox.
Beller, is there a call?
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, online at tsn1290.ca. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, facebook.com/Illegal Curve, And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show our good friend. He's the Los Angeles Kings color analyst, Jim Fox. Jim, good afternoon, and thanks very much for joining us.
My pleasure, guys. Anytime. Thank you.
Jim, obviously, we look at this Los Angeles Kings team, and you know, the Jets are going to be in Los Angeles today for the first time since they returned. And the Kings look like they're pretty clearly going to be locked into the third spot in the Pacific Division, meaning that they will play either the Ducks or the Sharks, whoever doesn't win the division. In your mind, do the Kings match up better against the Ducks or the Sharks?
There's no difference there. I think that there's a lot of similarities by the three teams you're talking about, and that they're very big down the middle. Mm-hmm. And I think that makes the matchup interesting, but I don't think there's many differences. Of course, you have Thornton, and then you have Getzlaf. So you pick your poison. It's certainly a difficult task at any means to do it that way. You know, I think that the Kings have played better this year against the Sharks in the regular season. They've played better games against them than they have against the Ducks. But, you know, again, I'm not one that really looks to the regular season results before you go into a playoff series. I think a lot of things can change, and certainly when you get the chance to focus on one team, that can change a lot of things too.
Jim, how would a Kings-Ducks series, how good would that be for hockey in the area?
Well, it is what everyone's waiting for. I mean, that's what everyone's talking about. That's what they want to see. It would be big because in the history of the Kings and the Ducks, mm-hmm. it's been extremely rare where each team has even made the playoffs in the same season. So, you know, it's either one team's good one year and the other team's just awful. And it kind of flip-flopped for a whole bunch of years. Now, the last 3 or 4 years, it's been a different thing. Now each team has been strong. So I think that it's something that we've been trying for years and at times, to be honest, almost manufacturing a rivalry. Mm-hmm. Now it's there because the teams are solid. They have been solid for years, and if they ever play, you know, in the playoff series, that's what everyone's waiting for.
And Jim, that really speaks, Jim, to the to the new division format.
Well, you know what? In the Pacific, we knew going in. I was asked. We did a pregame show for Fox Sports West when we, you know, started the season, and it was, "What are you looking forward to?" And I was looking forward to the battle of California. I mean, I felt that all three teams would be strong, and I guess that wasn't going out on a limb by any means. Mm-hmm. But it has certainly proved to be exactly that. And unfortunately, the Kings fell behind too early in the season. But as you guys are probably aware, and most people say it about the Kings, they feel they're a team, if it is possible, to be built for the playoffs. And that they're a grinding team, they'll wear you down. And over a seven-game series, it's going to be difficult to beat them.
Absolutely. I mean, it looked very good when they came through Winnipeg just recently. You look at the amount of players, you know, Jim, that headed over to Sochi for the Olympics and obviously the comeback now. How have those players played and fared since the Olympics? Have you seen any lag at all, or are they just a well-oiled machine in that regard?
Yeah, I think the only thing that has really been different has been the improved play of Dustin Brown since the Olympics. And I talked to Dustin, and he said basically mental reset. It just was, you know, you get to a point in the season, and I think this is what happens with Dustin, and it's difficult to explain, and maybe players would not admit it, but you get to a certain point of the season where if it's not going well for you, you look at their games remaining and you go, you know what, my numbers are just not going to be there this year. No matter what you do, it's just not going to happen. So you stop thinking about the negative and you just play the games. And I think that's what's happened for Dustin Brown since the Olympic break. You know, he came back, he played on a very strong line there. Didn't play in a lot of minutes in the last game, but he played on a very strong line for Team USA to start the Olympics. And I think he came back here and it was just a mental reset. Then he said, you know, he's kind of in a different role right now, and that's been another interesting situation where Daryl Sutter, the head coach, says, you know, he's just kind of a role player. He's a banger. He's up and down. He's north and south. And Dustin Brown says, hey, I want to be a difference maker. Mm-hmm. So I think perhaps Daryl uses that as motivation at times. Whatever he's done, certainly since the Olympics, Dustin Brown's been a much better player.
Is there motivation for Dustin, too, in terms of, you know, maybe what happened with Dan Bylsma, a lack of trust there?
Maybe, yeah, maybe he wants to prove, you know, something to prove. I think that's certainly there. Again, early in that Olympics, he was on the line with Backes, and they were you know, playing very well, and they were the shutdown line, and they were getting a lot of ice time. And then, you know, when they got into games where they needed goals, Dustin found himself on the end of the bench. So
right.
I'm sure it shook him up a little bit, and I guess you have a couple of ways to react. You can get ticked off, and go negative, or you can let it push you, and it looks like it's let Dustin push him, because again, he's getting to the front now, he's back on the penalty kill, he's on the power play, so he's certainly back to that impact type of player that he wants to be.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, online at tsn1290.ca. We're joined by Los Angeles Kings color analyst Jim Fox, talking about the Kings, the opponent for the Winnipeg Jets tonight at Staples Center.
Jim, Marian Gaborik was obviously the big trade deadline acquisition for the Kings. He's played 11 games now for the Kings. He's got 6 points. What's been your impression of Marian Gaborik in the small sample size? How has he fit in with the LA Kings?
He's fit in fine. And again, this was brought up, and I thought it was explained very well by Daryl Sutter. You know, Daryl was asked, how are his line mates reacting to him? And Daryl kind of turned it around, which is the theme and kind of the identity of the Kings. And he said, hey, it's not about how his teammates react. You know, it's about the group accepting him. And he has to, Gaborik, change his game a little bit. He doesn't have to be the go-to guy when you're with the Kings. You don't have to be the guy. They're not made that way. They have a different mindset and a different attitude. And I think the thing that we're seeing now, though, and we should have known this, when Marian Gaborik started in the NHL, his head coach was Jacques Lemaire.
Yep.
You're not going to be a one-dimensional player playing for Jacques Lemaire. You're going to learn how to play defense. And that's exactly what he did. And so when he comes to a Kings team that's known for defense, he's fit in fine. I mean, he knows his way around both ends of the ice, so it has not been a difficult time to adjust.
Jim, you look at the Los Angeles Kings roster, and I mean, it's a who's who of players in the NHL. Kopitar, Carter, Richards, Williams, we just mentioned Gaborik. Yet they're only 26th in the NHL in goals for. How is that the case?
It's because they don't cheat offensively. Mm-hmm. They think exclusively defense first. When they won the Stanley Cup, they were the 29th highest scoring team in the National Hockey League in the regular season. So it's not part. It's also a mindset that works in the playoffs. So you don't have to change your attitude. You don't have to change the way you're thinking about things when you get from the regular season and transition to the playoffs. You just kind of keep playing the same way. Now, what it does, you end up playing a lot of low scoring games, a lot of one goal games, and that style, because they don't score a lot, the margin for error is nil. But they get used to that, and it's very successful once it comes to the playoff time.
Jim, we were talking about this on our midweek show, pardon me, that we do on Wednesdays. We were comparing the current LA Kings team versus the team that won the Cup a couple years ago. We wanted to ask you, because you are obviously really close to the team, which team do you think is better, this team or the team that won the Cup a couple years ago?
Better is a tough term. I would say the way I look at it now is completely different since they have won. You know, going into it, the 2012, you have that hope issue. I think since they have won it, and then they went back to the Western Final last year, which is very difficult to do and hadn't been done in a few years. I think that this team is different because I think the team that won the Cup was much more solid and consistent as far as the defensive pairs went. They had a righty and a lefty on each pair, mm-hmm. and they had a veteran stay-at-home guy with a young puck mover on each pair. That's kind of changed around for the Kings this year, so that's where the difference exists. Now, as we're speaking right now, coming off the road trip, I think the Kings' defensive pairs have been the strength of the team. It has not been the case so far this year. So there's the difference, and then you probably do have more of a finish up front, adding Gaborik to the mix. A guy who could finish, he doesn't need many chances. He showed the other night, third period goal against Washington on the last road trip where he just zinged it to the top corner. I would say maybe a little bit more concern consistency-wise on the blue line, but a little bit more firepower up front.
You look at these possible matchups in the first round, Jim, either San Jose or Anaheim, both can skate pretty well. And you look at you mentioned the back end, guys like Mitchell and Regier, reliable, tough, they hit. They're not the best skaters. Is that a concern at all matchup-wise for the Kings in a series like that?
I don't think it's a concern because they know what they have and they're confident in what they have. They know that these guys aren't going to be jackrabbits all of a sudden. It's just not going to happen. Mm-hmm. And I think the team concept, again, plays right into that. Back to the Olympic break, I don't think any player benefited from the Olympic break more than Robin Regier. I think since then he has been maybe one of the top three defensemen for the Kings. And, you know, there's a guy that grinds it out, and he's not the fastest skater, but his purpose he's playing with now, and when he goes into a hit and makes contact, he is extremely efficient right now. So, yeah, I think it's something that you know, and you just bear with it because you build your team that way.
The Los Angeles Kings will play against the Winnipeg Jets later tonight at Staples Center. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're joined by Jim Fox. He's an LA Kings color analyst, talking about the Kings ahead of that game.
And Jim and Bob do a great job covering it down in the States. Watch those in the late games all the time on center ice. Jim, when you look at this team, and you know, we saw Mike Richards here about a couple weeks ago, played a real strong game. Justin Williams, Dustin Brown, all these guys don't have high point totals, and we've talked about it throughout the interview. You know, based on the style of play the Kings you know, try to employ, it's not taking risks and cheating. These guys are all below 45 points. Has anything changed performance-wise from these guys over the past couple years, or is it just a matter of the system that they're playing in?
I don't think anything's changed. I think the one guy who has been a concern, although, again, of late, the Kings are playing very well of late, especially on the road trip where they beat, you know, Philadelphia, they beat Washington, then they beat Pittsburgh. So you good teams all on the road. I think the productivity of Mike Richards is the biggest thing that's concerning. Again, on the last road trip, he is back to that intensity. Daryl Sutter backed him off, actually demoted him to the fourth line, played him less minutes, but those minutes became more intense. And that's what Daryl was hoping for. He was hoping for a quicker pace, and if he had to have less minutes. Now his minutes are getting back to normal, and the pace is staying there. So that's the only guy I would be concerned with. Again, with the other guys, I think it is just a factor of the system of the team. And, you know, you look at the top 30 scorers. I think Kopitar is the only guy there. You look at the top 30 scorers on defense. I think Doughty's the only guy there, and they're both around 28 or 29 when you look at the top, if they're still there. So that doesn't concern the team. They know that. I was reading Pierre LeBrun today where, you know, Kopitar, he feels, is the Selke Trophy winner. He named five defensemen who he felt for the best defenseman for Norris, and Doughty was one of those guys. So I think it takes you a couple of years when you get to L.A., especially if you're young and you're a big wheel, but once you get here, you realize that that's not going to work and you're going to have to fit in with the team.
Yeah, Jim, I agree with you on Doughty and Kopitar. We have one final question for you here. I think it's pretty apparent that the Kings are locked into third in the Pacific Division there. So for Daryl Sutter, how does he keep this team motivated knowing that they're not really competing for a higher seeding over these last 10 games? How does he have to try a different way to keep the Kings motivated?
I think it's just, when Daryl speaks, it's all about playoffs. It's all, you know, he just got his 500th win the other night. He says, I count playoff wins. So I think he's just trying to, you know, dot the I's, cross the T's, get everything working for the playoffs. And I think that's his only concern. I think that, you know, you have the luxury, if you're at the top of a division, to do that, and you're, you know, well ahead, you can back off and you kind of rest it. The Kings are just in the mindset of just making sure they're fine-tuning for the playoffs. So I think that's what Daryl does. Every time he speaks, just about it's about the playoffs. So that's where he motivates. He tries to get the guys ready for the most important time of the season. And yeah, you're right. You know, they've been locked into third. You know, we'll see. Probably for the last 3 months, it's been that way. You know, they kind of knew that was going to, you're not going to catch the top two, and it didn't look like many teams were going to catch the Kings from behind. So just think about the playoffs, and that's how he motivates.
Jim Fox covers the Los Angeles Kings. He's their color analyst on their TV broadcast. Jim, thanks very much for doing this. Enjoy the game between the Jets and the Kings tonight.
All right, guys. Thank you.
Take care, Jim. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. When we come back, we will further break down the Jets and the Kings.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Big thank you to Jim Fox.
Whoa, Drew.
I was really excited. Big thank you to Jim Fox, LA Kings color analyst, for having just joined us. In case you missed any of that interview, or the interview we conducted earlier in the show with Nelson Emerson, it will be available for download on iTunes. It'll be available on TSN1290.ca. And, of course, it'll be available on IllegalCurve.com. Still time for you to submit your Illegal Curve game-winning goal prediction ahead of tonight's Jets-Kings game in Los Angeles. 9 o'clock puck drop.
So the Kings can't change the ranking, and the Jets are out of it. Should be interesting.
but it's you know, it's a game in LA. First time they've been in LA. It's always fun in that arena. Richie was there 2 months ago.
Yeah, a few months ago. It's actually a great time. I was actually there for a Saturday night game. L.A., I don't know if it gets a bad rap or not anymore, but it is a hockey town. A ton of jerseys.
Yeah.
The fans know what they're talking about. It's a great experience. You go before the game. They have a real nice area around. It's downtown.
You can roller skate to the game.
Yeah, you can roller skate. The downtown is revitalized in Los Angeles.
That's the L.A. Live development, right?
Yeah, whatever it is, Drew. I don't know.
Are we going to have Sandy Schindelman on the show tonight or what? Okay, so, you know... I didn't
check the real estate deals, Drew, when I was ordering my burger before the game.
My relatives are going to be at the game. They're wearing their Jets paraphernalia.
Yeah, you know, jokes aside, the Jets performed well against the San Jose Sharks, as we mentioned, on Thursday, against a team that can skate and is a bigger team. The Kings aren't as fast as the Sharks or even the Jets, but they're bigger, stronger, and they're far better defensively and have a better defense and have a better goaltender. How do the Jets fare against a team like that?
Yeah.
If you're reading into these games, which I'm not really, but if you are reading into these games, then this will be an interesting test tonight.
That's what I was going to ask you. I mean, remember, you know, it was, I guess, March 6th, I believe, the day after the trade deadline that the Kings and the Jets played here. And the Kings just utterly dominated the
Jets. Yeah, that wasn't close, that game.
It wasn't close. Exactly right. So, I mean, and, you know, I think most people would say, you know, if the Kings beat the Jets, well, the Kings are more talented than the Jets. Most people that aren't, you know, relatively delusional would make that comment. So the question becomes, how do the Jets play a more competitive game against the Kings than they did about 3 weeks ago?
Well, I think that starts with creating more offense. I think it was blatantly clear, Richie, and that seems simple. Obviously, you know, they have to score more goals to win. But you look at the LA Kings, you mentioned it, Drew, when you asked Jim Fox about it. This is a bottom five, bottom 10 team in the NHL in scoring goals right now. But as Richie mentioned, it's a well-oiled machine. They're just great at everything.
Mm-hmm.
And sure, they're not scoring at the level that they've scored at in previous years, but I don't read too much into that. I really don't. And when it gets into the playoffs, they're going to have guys that can put the puck in the net. Mike Richards might only have 11 goals, but Jeff Carter is a guy. We saw how good he was at the Olympics. Jeff Cortnell and Russ Cortnell. Kopitar and Williams. Justin Williams is a guy that's really struggled this year. But, I mean, these guys, and you throw in the younger guys, Toffoli, Richie, they're going to score their goals.
Mm-hmm.
It's a question if one of these teams can match up and be better defensively. And not many teams can. Really, most teams can't. You're strong in net with Quick, and Martin Jones has come along, and that's why they could. That made Ben Scrivens expendable after Bernier. But you look at their defense, and they're just so big and so solid,
they can
move the puck, and they work. They might be one of the best 5-on-5 teams. I would put the Boston Bruins first, Chicago Blackhawks. 5-on-5, though, LA doesn't need to win games.
Absolutely.
Special teams mean nothing to this team because they're able to score goals whenever they need to. They can grind it out, as Jim Fox mentioned, better than anybody. This is a team that really plays playoff hockey 82 games a year.
I agree. I totally agree with everything you said. If they want to beat the Kings tonight, you can't take risks because the Kings are not going to take risks. So to beat them, you're going to try and take a risk because you're frustrated, but with how little room there is in the neutral zone, in the defensive zone, even to break out. So if you don't take risks, you have a better chance of winning. If you try and beat them and cheat, like for example, remember last game?
Yep.
Tobias Enstrom making a cross ice neutral zone pass. Who picks it off? Mike Richards waiting for it. That's cheating.
Right.
That pass ought not be made. And now, if you don't make it, you have a better chance of staying in a 2-1 game and taking a coin flip. But if you try and beat their trap and the size that they have and the way they position themselves by the short taking the short route, you're going to lose. And if you put the puck down the boards and just play that game, you'll take your chances on the power play, maybe get a break or two, and you'll be fine. But you're not going to get 6 breaks. So it's going to be tough tonight.
Rich is right. They got to use their speed better in the neutral zone. If you remember that game, I think it was 3 weeks ago, around 3 weeks ago,
the sixth that
the Jets lost 3-1. The Jets were primarily playing a dump and chase type of game, and they weren't really. The LA Kings are too big. You dump the puck in against guys like Willie Mitchell and Robin Regier and Doughty. You just won't get the puck out.
But hold on. On that point, you're right, because you have to dump it in because there's no room in the neutral zone.
Dump it in with a purpose.
But dump it in and chase it, because and I'll tell you why. Because Regier and Mitchell, we just talked about it with Jim Fox. Some of these guys aren't that fast, and the Jets are fast. So if you dump it in with a purpose, as he mentions, and you fly. If you're the right winger, you dump it in. You have your left winger going because he knows he's going to dump it in, and you follow the puck, or however your system works with the Jets, then you can get some pressure. But if you're going to try and make too many moves and then dump it in, what's going to happen? Puck out. You got to dump down with a purpose tonight.
Because you're not going to hit the blue line with any speed
right.
at all.
Exactly.
And to me, that's kind of what, going forward, the Jets need to do on a more consistent basis. Because I think defensively, they have made strides this year. I really do. And it took a while. It took a coaching change for that to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that really, sometimes you watch the Jets, and players like Blake Wheeler and Evander Kane and Dustin Byfuglien are able to use their speed in the neutral zone and really beat defensemen wide. And other games, you see the Jets really can't sustain anything, and it's really tough for them to get any type of offense created. And that's really where consistency comes in there. And they have to find ways to do that against these really good teams. Against the good teams, they can really make teams look pretty bad. When you're talking about the St. Louis Blues and Petrangelo and Bomeister and Shattenkirk and these guys, Jackman, that's the type of teams that are successful, that are able to just frustrate other teams. And the Jets, that's the teams that they really struggle with, the St. Louis's and the LA's and teams like this. And the San Jose Sharks, I mean, we've seen San Jose Sharks are a pretty good team as well. And we saw these guys doing a lot. So I don't think that the Jets don't have a hope in this game. But I just think that they have to find ways to win different than they were in Winnipeg, because that game in Winnipeg, and again, they've had games against other teams. Minnesota Wild was another game. They were having trouble generating any type of offense. And I'm not talking about the shot totals. I'm talking about legitimate scoring chances. And that's what they have to do. And I think the line combinations, I mean, Wheeler and Byfuglien, I actually like that combination there with Jokinen. And I think Frolik, Ladd, Little, they're not changing that anytime soon. So you got to be a little bit more aggressive, I think. Absolutely.
Pavlik back in net for the Jets after he missed, I believe it was it six games total with his injury?
Yep.
Something like that. He's back in net for the Jets. You know, what do you expect to see from Andre Pavlik today?
Really putting him into the fire there.
Yeah, I don't know what to expect, to be honest. He's been off for a while, Drew. And a goalie coming off an injury is very difficult to project how he will perform.
Let alone goalies in general.
Yeah, also true. But he has played better under Maurice. So I expect probably similar performance to what he's done so far under Paul Maurice. The Kings, if you play a disciplined game, aren't going to get a ton of chances, hence the lack of goals. But if you open it up, they can take advantage. So you know, I have really no clue. I'm interested to see how Pavlik performs. That's one of the interesting storylines of tonight's game, with his new mask and all. But yeah, and I think for him, this is start him. It's important that it's a tryout for next year in terms of how the team, you know, how the team builds their goal, how the team structures their goaltending for next year.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a good point. I think it is a big game for Pavlik, and we heard that he was ready to come back on Thursday. But guys, he's been watching from the sidelines here for almost 2 weeks now, and for him, this game does mean a lot to him. And I think it doesn't, it's not that it doesn't mean a lot to Al Montoya, but he's started six straight games now. And Pavlik really wants to show down the stretch here that he can play well. I don't think there's any issue with his commitment to this team, but I think he wants to end the season strong. He doesn't want to end the season on sitting up in the press box, right? So it is a big game for him, and I think he'll be fine. It's just the LA Kings right now, there aren't many teams right now that can stop them. Five wins in a row. They've only lost a couple games here recently, so it's not going to be the easiest team for him to play against.
Hey, it wouldn't be the first GM to react based on his goalie's last 10 games. If he completely knocks the lights out here, maybe he entrenches himself a little bit more. If he plays awful as a sub-90 save percentage, maybe they add not a guy to compete with him, but a guy to take over. You don't know, but it's certainly more important for him than it is for, say, you know, Tobias Enstrom or somebody like that.
Sure. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll do a whip around the league with NHL news and notes. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290.
Drew Puck.
TSN1290.ca. Puck drop. 9 p.m. tonight in Los Angeles between the Jets and the Los Angeles Kings. You know, usually it's a three-headed monster. I think it's a four-headed monster. I think it's JP Vigée. I think it's Dennis Bayak, Brian Munns, Shane Knighty. It's not going to be enough room in the broadcast booth for all those guys. Anyways, you can hear it live here on TSN 1290. Ezzy.
Yeah, we have a little shout-out that we want to do for our good friends Aaron DeGroote and Julie DeGroote. There's a great event coming up tomorrow, actually, and we've always promoted this event on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's the sixth annual Trek for Tourette. It helps raise awareness and funds for Canadians living with Tourette syndrome. All proceeds go towards education, advocacy, self-help, and research. The event is tomorrow at Assiniboine Park at the Duck Pond. There's a 5-kilometer and 10-kilometer run and it's sponsored by The Running Room. I won't be participating in that because I can only run for half a kilometer. So
you can't even run for half a kilometer.
It's at Assiniboine Park tomorrow, and there are some special guests. And I'm about to tell you who those special guests are going to be. Mickey Moose from the Winnipeg Jets.
Nice.
And there's going to be a couple bombers there, Mike Renault and Paul Swiston. So, you know, get out to that event. It's for a great cause. Aaron and Julie DeGroote are good friends of the show. So definitely go support that.
Absolutely. Nice cause. Nice cause, exactly. Let's head for NHL News and Notes.
NHL News and Notes.
We start the start on Long Island, where the word broke earlier this week, according to by Bob McKenzie of TSN, the Hockey Insider, that Charles Wang is looking to sell his majority stake in the New York Islanders. Sort of an interesting timing for that, because this is a guy who...
No surprise, really. That's been the rumblings for a while now.
Really? You're not surprised about this at all?
No, I've heard rumblings for a while.
Apparently, I think it was Chris Bottom wrote about this, that he's been trying to sell the team for 3 years.
Yeah, I mean, you hear rumblings around the league that this is the guy who's trying to get out. And the question is, you just signed a lease in Brooklyn.
That's right.
You don't own the arena.
Yeah.
So, I mean, how do you make money on a lease? It's going to be difficult.
Well, whoever's going to buy the team is locked into a lease, whether or not they like it or not.
Unless it's the Nets owner, who's indicated in the past that he's not interested.
The Nets owner, of course, is the Russian billionaire.
Mikhail Prokhorov.
Yeah. And not Jay-Z. Maybe Jay-Z wants to buy the team.
What are you going to do? I mean, how are you going to make money? Make some money, but you have to own the arena.
Yeah, Ken Campbell of the Hockey News wrote a good article. Maybe we can get Remus to tweet that out, but he said he thinks it's going to be really hard. As Richie mentioned, the key for ownership now is you have to own the arena and own the concessions and the parking and all that. And apparently it's a 30-year lease that they signed with Barclays.
Really?
I think it was 30. Maybe we'll check that.
25 years or 30, yeah.
Yeah, 25 or 30 years. So apparently the issue, according to Ken Campbell in that article, is that Wang's asking for $300 million, and apparently that's too much.
Well, I mean, when you don't own the arena and you've locked into a lease, it's pretty difficult to sell the team.
Yeah, exactly right.
You know, it's called foresight.
Chris Kreider of the New York Rangers, he's going to be out for a while. He's got hand surgery. He will be out until after the playoffs begin, if I recall correctly. It's going to be right around there, but it seems like he will be out indefinitely at the very least. How important of a loss is that for the Rangers?
Well, it's a big loss, Drew, because of the way that Alain Vigneault employs his roster. And by that, I mean he plays there's a lot of balance there. He plays all of his lines. And his defenseman, and he plays everybody there. And when you're playing, you know, he's going to be he's a significant factor. Plus, if the Rangers do match up against the Flyers in round one,
oh, that'll be good.
It'll be great. But I mean, Chris Kreider is a guy who creates a ton with speed, and not having him in the roster, you know, Carl Hagelin's another guy in that team who creates chances with speed. But Kreider's more of a scorer than Hagelin. It's going to be a big loss for that team, I think, especially against a Flyers team that's rolling right now, is deep, as Vinny LeCavalier on the fourth line, well, he performed really well yesterday against the Leafs. So, and against the Flyers' defense, that, you know, sometimes can be, if you think about it, Kreider, a guy going down against Grossman, against Luke Shen, you can take advantage of the lack of speed there. So that's a big loss.
Yeah, it is a big loss. And they, it's hard to believe. I really like Kreider. He came into the playoffs 3 years ago, and he did a really good job. Or was it 2 years ago against remember the year the Devils went to the finals? But they have so much. They're not going to be as affected maybe as much as other teams, in the sense that they have St. Louis, and they have a lot of guys, Nash, and as you mentioned, Hagelin. And Zuccarello has had a really good year there, small, but really, really skilled offensively. But for them to have a successful playoff run, as Richie mentioned, they want to have a chance to beat a team like the Flyers. Look at the Flyers, and they've really turned it on. Scotty Hartnell just got his 20th. Giroux, Voracek, Matt Reed has really picked it up. All those guys that were struggling in the first half of the year have really started to come along. So they're going to need a guy like him when, in the playoffs, as we know, goals are hard to come by.
Another injury, Evgeny Malkin, 2 to 3 weeks he's going to be out with a foot injury. You think that the Penguins are in a better spot to weather that injury, given that they, you know, their first round matchup shouldn't be too difficult.
Well,
he should be back for
it. They should
it.
Be able to.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, anytime you're losing a guy right around the playoffs, it, you know, if there's ever any setback, I mean, you know, we say 2 to 3 weeks, and, you know, people tend to think it's gospel. If there's any setback, all of a sudden the Pittsburgh Penguins are without Evgeny Malkin.
Yep. Yeah, and Brandon Sutter's playing second line center, and you have some holes on that team. I don't think that team is bulletproof by any means. Don't have a great vibe about them right now. Still a couple weeks left in this season, but I'm not so sure this team isn't a possible first-round upset.
Well, if they, I mean, right now they'd be scheduled to face, well, either Detroit or Columbus. I mean, it would be Detroit given
that. I think they want to play Columbus.
Yeah.
Well, I think they want to play Columbus because of the fact that their skill and speed, I think, might be too much for Columbus. But Detroit is a team that can keep up with them, especially, and you're talking about injuries, Drew. What happens if Detroit's guys come back and Pittsburgh's guys come back? Because Detroit's guys come back and their record is not a reflection of a full roster. So sure. It's very deceiving, and that's not an easy first-round matchup by any means, especially with the experience. I know they have a lot of young guys now, but the experience they have and the depth that they have with the fact that all these guys are injured and they're still bringing it up. Riley Sheehan performing really well.
Yep.
Tatar, Nyquist. I mean, these guys aren't just performing. They're performing exceptionally well at a very high level.
And my favorite name in the NHL right now, Glendening. Glendening. You look at it's to me it's kind of really fascinating that we're talking about those two teams. Pittsburgh and Detroit have had the most man games lost to injury of any team. Detroit's number one. I think Pittsburgh's two or three. But you look at Pittsburgh and the depth issue. They just have so many injuries. Letang and Martin on the back end, and then you throw in Malkin and then Gotch now, and then Dupuis we know is out for the year. So there's just so many injuries. That's why we were curious to see they didn't maybe add more. And I think Lee Stempniak's done a good job on the first line there. But Lee Stempniak at this point in his career is not, even though Dupuis is older now too, he isn't going to address those needs. So they have to get these guys. And they Malkin and Gotch will be back for the playoffs. We're not so sure about Letang and Martin. But I agree with Richie. They're not bulletproof, whereas in previous years they really were, especially the years they won the Cup. And they went to the finals, but I agree. They were my pick to win the Stanley Cup at the beginning of the year. I'm not changing that. But the way Boston has played and the way these teams...
I would be. I don't know about them right now. I wouldn't.
No, I'm just saying I have to stick by it, right? Because
yeah.
I'm not as confident as I was back in October.
And you have to wonder this. Is Dan Bylsma coaching for his job? Because a first-round exit is different than a third-round exit, although the way they went out in the third round last year was not pretty. But a first-round exit this year, you have to wonder if he's out.
Third round, they almost went out in the first round last year.
Yeah, the Islanders played him six games.
So no, but your point is well taken. He is. Well, they were talking about it on the big show a couple days ago. I mean, I don't think his job is by any means solidified.
If they go out in the first round, I think I have no doubts that he would lose his job.
Really?
Yeah. You can't go out in the first round when you have Sidney Crosby on your team.
The problem is, Drew, that's a fair point. The problem is this many years in a row that they haven't got to the finals, right, when they've been a team that ought to have.
Maybe you get 1 year of a pass where you run into a buzzsaw and everything goes against you. But if you're without, if Malkin's healthy for the playoffs and you have Crosby and Malkin and you go out in the first round after another disappointing playoff performance.
Because they won in, 2009 now, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been a while. 2009. They lost in 2008. They won in 2009. Guess what? That's 5 years.
5 years, and that's Sidney's prime.
Yeah, I know he was injured for a couple of those, but still.
Still, it's his prime years. I mean, you know. Yeah.
They're not built for first-round
exits.
Yeah,
the year they lost to Tampa, he didn't play,
right,
if I recall correctly.
That's right. Ottawa Senators forward Bobby Ryan, season-ending hernia surgery.
Yep.
Apparently, he's been injured for a while now.
Yes.
Yeah.
How much of his... lousy performance this year, do you chalk up to the injury? How much do you chalk up to, Bobby Ryan just maybe not fitting into the Ottawa system?
I don't know if the system thing, Drew. I think it's a system that is trying to score goals and trying to play up tempo. Bobby Ryan is a guy now. He's coming in on his last year of a $5.1 million deal coming into the offseason. So I look at it from the perspective of where does Bobby Ryan sit with the Ottawa Senators on
an ongoing basis. Yep.
But in terms of his production, Drew, they just had an offseason. Everybody did. I don't put it all on Bobby Ryan's shoulders. He's an easy target. There are issues that he has in terms of, I think, his battle level at times and his competitiveness, I think, is not great. I think that was chronicled by Brian Burke and others. But he still does score goals, and I don't know what they expected from him. Maybe a little bit more in terms of production, but a lot of the times over the course of the year, guys, his line with Turris was producing, and it was Spezza's line that wasn't producing. So I don't look at it too much. I look at it more so as, hey, they gave up a first-round pick, which is going to be what? Top 10?
Yeah.
Not a great draft, but top 10. Give up Silverberg, so...
Almost reminds you of the Phil Kessel situation, right? Giving up that first-round pick, thinking they were going to be a playoff team.
Yeah,
I agree with Richie. He doesn't. I don't think I fault him or put a lot of the blame on him. I think so many players have had really bad years for that team. You look at, with the exception of maybe Clark MacArthur, Erik Karlsson, the defense has had all types of issues. The goaltending's not as good as it was, even though Craig Anderson was really good last night. But Bobby Ryan still had 23 goals in 70 games. You'd expect him to be 35 at 35. He's a guy that usually is above the 30 goal mark, but it's just, it's one of those things. It's just another bad thing about the Senators season, because to me, when we look back on this season, they're one of the biggest disappointments as a team. I had them as a playoff team. They've got so much talent there. Bobby Ryan coming over, but so many other good players, young players like Zibanejad and Cody Ceci and Cowan. So it's just been a bad year for them.
Spezza and Ryan, both up after next year, making a combined $12.1 million, coming up on their, you know, Spezza is over 30 now. And Ryan is, you know, neither are these both aren't guys. Spezza is 30 right now. These both aren't guys who are, you know, guys who've been dominant with their speed by any means. And Bobby Ryan's 27. But it's a big decision for the Senators, which direction they're going to go. And are those two, is it going to be a decision where you keep one and not the other? You keep both? Or you say, if I'm going to get rid of one, I'm getting rid of both. But Brian Murray has big decisions to make.
Absolutely. Let's head to break. One final segment when we come back. It's called Rapid Fire. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
One final segment this Saturday, I guess evening now, as we do this late start time of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Jets and the Kings, 9 p.m. on this fine station. This segment is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. For over 25 years, Rumors has been Winnipeg's home for the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. The 7:15 p.m. show tonight with K. Trevor Wilson is sold out. There are a few tickets left for the 10 p.m. show. He's here all next week as well, so you can be sure to check him out. RumorsComedyClub.com is where to get the tickets, or give him a call at 488-4520.
Rapid fire.
Rapid fire for this Saturday afternoon. On Friday, the Buffalo Sabres announced that they will retire Dominic Hasek's number 39 next season in a special pregame ceremony. He will be the seventh Sabres player to have his number retired. He has one Stanley Cup ring, one Olympic gold medal, and his 389 career wins rank him 11th in NHL history. Where does Dominic Hasek rank among the best goalies of all time?
That is a really good question, Drew. That's,
you know why?
And I know you didn't write it.
That was my my question.
Yeah. I have to say, like, over the
if I wrote it, it would have been about Baltics or something.
For one game, Dominic Hasek was the best goalie that I've probably ever seen. For the course of his career, I don't think he did it long enough, as long as Brodeur, Hasek, or guys like that.
You mean Brodeur,
Walk, excuse me. Yeah. But in one game, there was no goalie I would have been more scared to play than Dominic Hasek.
Yeah, you're still not over 98 yet.
No, it's but just
well,
any
he stole that game.
Any games your team played against him during that course of time, you thought you'd lose. You thought you'd have to, if you got a goal, you tried to win 1-0 because you didn't think you'd get two.
And what we didn't throw in there is the six Vezinas, and I think he won those all in a row. Or they were, at least five of them were in a row. We'll have to check that maybe. I think Dominic Hasek is absolutely top three. You guys know that I think Marty Brodeur is number one.
Mm-hmm. But yeah,
I think it's absolutely Brodeur, Hasek, and Gump Worsley.
Okay, by the way.
Just kidding. I mean, Gump Worsley is great. I just thought I'd throw in a random goalie.
That's from Drew's era. But let's see if we can get the other six guys who've had their number retired by the Sabres.
The French Connection line.
Well, so that's Rick Martin, René Robert, and Gilbert Perreault.
Yeah,
that's
LaFontaine.
LaFontaine's four. Howard
I thought
Chuck.
They unretired him after after what just happened.
Howard Chuck's five, right?
So, yeah, we're missing one.
There's one more guy.
Teppo Numminen?
Who's the six? I don't remember.
I have no clue.
Yeah. Interesting question.
Yeah. Wasn't Jeff Parker? See, we're bringing it full circle today is what we're doing here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Second question. The Juno Cup was held on Friday at the MTS Iceplex as part of the Juno Week celebrations. It was established in 2004 by Blue Rodeo frontman Jim Cuddy and features Canadian musicians against former NHL players in support of Music Counts, Canada's music education charity. Excluding the good old hockey game by Stompin' Tom Connors, presumably because it's a runaway winner for this question, what is your favorite song about hockey?
It's a good question, Drew. Quickly on the Sabres, Howard Chuck not retired, but Danny Gare.
Oh yeah,
and Tim Horton.
Oh, cool,
Tim Horton.
Yeah. So that ought to be noted. In terms of favorite hockey song, it's a very difficult question. But I guess the definition of hockey song needs to be taken into consideration. Is it like songs you play at hockey games or songs about hockey?
I was going for songs that are about hockey or that feature hockey prominently in the song.
Like the Hip?
Yeah, well, for me, it's 50 Mission Cap.
Yeah,
by the hip. That's just an amazing song story about Bill Barilko. But yeah, it could be a song that's very common at hockey arenas. I mean, we're talking music here. We don't want to take it too seriously.
Like, Come On, Feel the Noise. Like,
that's
a big hockey. That's a big hockey song. Like, Remus is probably all over this.
Well, Remus would pick Darude by Sandstorm.
I don't know what any of those words just meant.
What about that new song? What's that guy? That new one that's always playing at the MTS Center. What's the band? We always talk about it up in the.
Kesha.
I don't know. I don't know what Kesha is.
I like that Zamboni song. You know, I want to ride the Zamboni.
Yeah, that seems like a song that you would like.
I think
that sounds like a very left-handed compliment.
Like another one that a lot of people like is like Saturday Night by Nickelback that they used to play.
Well, that's Hockey Night Canada.
And there's also that Arkell song.
That's an Elton John song.
The Arkell song that they play at Chicago Blackhawks games.
I thought that's the Chelsea Dagger, isn't it?
Isn't that the Arkells?
No,
Kellys
not the Arkells.
That's Fratellis.
That Remus to here. Remus. Yeah,
didn't you
Remus,
have a Fratelli for
it's
lunch?
Remus is. We can see Remus has the ability to type in his little room over there, and he's saying it's the Fratellis.
Fratellis, Chelsea Dagger.
Yeah. So I mean, that songs like that count. Anyways, okay. That was a terrible question.
Yeah,
sorry,
it was
guys.
Pretty bad. On Wednesday, former world heavyweight champion boxer Riddick Bowe tweeted, "If the Leafs lose tomorrow, I'm going to knock out Randy Carlyle. One punch between the eyes." Carlyle responded on Friday by saying, "I'll have to get my posse together from Azilda, which is a town near Sudbury." The 46-year-old Bowe owns a home in Toronto and is apparently a big Leafs fan. Should Leafs enforcer Colton Orr challenge Riddick Bowe to a fight, and who do you think would win?
It's such an Ezzy question.
Yeah, it really is.
Go back to the middle of the show. Riddick Bowe's never been in a hockey game before. Why is he relevant?
Why is he threatening Randy Carlyle? I think, you know what?
Why does he live in
you
Toronto?
Know what, Riddick, if you have a problem, Colton Orr will go one-on-one with you, and you can see how you stack up against him, because Colton Orr is pretty tough. So I think you should pick on someone your own size and age.
Get Craig Carlyle after him.
Yeah, exactly. Randy's son. Yeah. Why is he threatening Randy Carlyle? It's ridiculous. And then he also said later yesterday, "See you in the parking lot." Is this guy out of his mind?
That's actually great. Riddick Bowe, I mean, why is and he lives in Toronto part-time?
Yeah, I don't know why he lives in Toronto. I mean,
people are doing interviews with him. They have nothing better to do.
He's a washed-up former boxer is what he is.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a fair assessment of Riddick Bowe.
Randy's pretty tough, too.
Yeah, Randy's gotten into some fights.
I wouldn't mess with Randy. You see how he reacted when he didn't get toast in the toaster on 24/7?
Yeah.
The toaster, he beat the toaster up.
Randy can hold his own.
Final question in rapid fire. Yesterday, the Detroit News reported that Red Wings forwards Darren Helm and Thomas Tatar may be evicted from their condo complex over noise complaints.
That's amazing.
The Main Street Lofts Condominium Association have filed a lawsuit in court seeking an injunction against Helm and Tatar, requiring them to comply.
Tartar, not tar- Drew. It's not a meal.
I know. I'm kidding.
So Drew had tartar sauce on his fish sticks yesterday.
We're asking a question about a condo complex. I really think we're through the looking glass here. Requiring them to comply with their rules or to vacate the premises, because only Richie and Drew currently live in condos, while Ezra owns a house. Who is more likely to be evicted from their condo, Richard or Drew?
I think I can only answer this question because I'm the only one that doesn't have a condo. So I think, you know what, even though Richie has some late night parties, he has, the boys over for some drinks late at night, I think it's going to be Drew because I think Brixton, because of the animal, I think if Brixton, you know, is a little bit too loud, you know, sometimes Brixton, when I come over, Brixton definitely barks at me. But that's because you say attack when I come over. So
what time in the middle of the night did you write these questions?
I watched Dallas Buyers Club last night, so it was probably around 11:30.
I guess you would say the people who are neighbors with Darren Helm would be, you know, living a nightmare on Helm Street.
Well, I got to say something about this story because it was in the Detroit newspaper. Apparently, Helm,
why is that in the paper?
Apparently, Helm doesn't live there anymore. He just like sublets it to Thomas Tatar. So apparently, Tatar is the one that's been having the parties, and then Helm is just in trouble because he actually owns it. But regardless, I mean, they're hockey players. They're pro hockey players. They're young. They're partying.
I'm surprised anybody lives in Detroit aside from them.
Yeah.
I still think that the answer would be Ezzy. I mean, somehow his roommate would kick him out, I think.
No, but I own a house. I mean, I can do whatever I want. I can, you know, walk around in a bathrobe in the backyard.
Oh, God.
It's my house.
Timmy, can we go to Cheers and Jeers and end this?
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And Jeers.
No, not good enough. He's a bad boy.
I never seen something like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Ezra?
I was going to cheer Dominic Hasek's number being retired, but I'm going to cheer the Brandon Wheat Kings. They swept the Regina Pats.
Yeah.
4-0. It took them to the last couple weeks of the season to make the playoffs. And also, Jace Horlock actually had a scary incident where he had to leave the game, and he's okay. And he actually got a point yesterday, a goal, I believe, and an assist. So my cheer goes to the Wheaties.
My cheer goes to these lunatics who are going after James Reimer's wife on Twitter.
Yeah, absolutely.
What is wrong? I mean, I know Twitter is ridiculous. I hate Twitter. Don't get me started on that. But these guys going after the goaltender, the backup goaltender's wife? Holy smokes.
It's despicable.
Unbelievable. You know, I'd say unbelievable. It is believable based on what we see on there on a daily basis.
It's not shocking anymore, which is the saddest part of the whole thing.
Three words, get a life.
Yeah. Exactly. Would you guys like me to read what Riddick Bowe just tweeted?
Sure.
Did he actually just tweet something?
Yeah.
Do you follow him?
No, Michael Trakos, who was on Wednesday's show, just retweeted it. It was from 37 minutes ago. Riddick Bowe says, "I'm giving you one more chance tonight, Randy. Make it happen versus Detroit or else. Hashtag Bowe Leafs Bowe."
Well, he's out of his mind.
I'm going to wrap up cheers and jeers. I'm going to cheer Habs prospect Tim Bozon. He was in a coma with meningitis. He seems to have beaten that. He's on his way back to health. You know, he's out of the coma. He's out of the hospital. Yep. So terrific news that Tim Bozon is on the road back to recovery for the Saskatoon Blades of the Western Hockey League. That's it for this Saturday and the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Big thank you to Nelson Emerson, LA Kings player personnel. Big thank you to Jim Fox, LA Kings color analyst. In case you missed any of those interviews or any of the show, it will be available for download on iTunes. It will be available on tsn1290.ca and, of course, on our website, illegalcurve.com. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, CompuStitch Embroidery Design, and Bernstein's Deli. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com. Programming note, no midweek show this Wednesday. We're preempted so we can bring you Blue Jays baseball here on the station. We will be back next Saturday at 12 noon, the usual start time. For producer Remus and producer Tim, for Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Hustler and Lawless, live from the Staples Center in Los Angeles, is next.
You've been listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
Catch the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca.